You are listening to episode number 304 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I am your acting host, Bri. Joining me once again is the ever stalwart, ever faithful man from New York, Taser. Taser, welcome to the show.
Bite me.
Hey, I just gave you like six compliments in a row. You got to turn around. You know what? Really? I take back everything I said about
take
you.
It
fuck
back.
You.
See, fuck you.
Fuck
too.
You.
Fuck you. Right here. Right here.
I can't see what you're motioning to.
Imagine it. Just imagine it. You read comics. You can imagine.
Also joining us, the man soon to be freeze-dried by Chicago weather, Mr. Benjamin, a.k.a. the Marvelous Iggy. Ben, welcome to the show.
I'm going to the frozen Badlands and I'm scared.
You are not ready. Going from Texas to Chicago is going to be an experience for you, dude. I'm pulling for you. I hope you come out in one piece.
He's
going
to freeze his Twinkie.
Those familiar with the show should follow Kuhan and West for the hilarity that shall ensue, I believe. So, but postponing that for the moment, while Ben is with us, once again, we are the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. We review all things Marvel, comic books, TV, movies, toys, video games, occasionally pornography once in a while. That has happened on this show, if I recall correctly. How many years ago was that?
Although I do have one that I want to review for the show. I just need to finish, if you can believe that.
I mean, it shouldn't take you that long, right? Only like what?
It has story.
It has story. You watch it for the plot, you know.
Believe it or not, honestly, I watch it for the plot. And they have good costumes. The costume department needs to be applauded. They should get an Academy Award at the Pornies.
Yeah. You know what? I'll give you that, man, because I remember back when that first Avengers one dropped, the costume design of that was excellent.
Yeah,
it was so well done.
The Iron Man looked pretty damn good.
I'm not arguing with you. I mean, for what budget I imagine they must have had, which was like -$4, I imagine they did pretty well. So,
you know, I can make a comment, but that's clearly going to take us into blue territory. So I'm
going to keep
going.
Moving right along. Let's segue into the news. The news for this week. We got some comic book news. Were you guys aware that they're doing giant size X-Men one-shots? They announced a line of like five of them coming out that will be, you know, self-contained episodic stuff for specific characters, in the vein of the giant size X-Men from back in the day with you know, Len Wein and Dave Cockrum and that crew.
No, I was not.
Yeah, there's going to be a series of five coming out, which are the first batch. First one's going to be Giant Size X-Men, Jean Grey and Emma Frost, a team-up book. That's going to be coming out this month. And then it's going to be Giant Size X-Men, Magneto in March, followed by Nightcrawler in April. And then we get Phantom X is getting his own one-shot, which I believe will run in May. And then finally in June, they're capping off with a Storm giant-sized one-shot. So we're going to be getting I think the pitch behind these, because Hickman is writing all of them, but I think his pitch behind them is just kind of give them their own self-contained thing, you know, expand a little bit on what some of the characters who you don't see as often are up to. Because in case you missed it, the X-Men books they got going now, it is a wide gamut they are running. They're covering a lot of territory, and people are still being left out. So if nothing else, I'm excited to see, you know, what the other one-shots will bring. In addition to that, they've recently announced a brand new ongoing series from Kurt Busiek called The Marvels, which they're kind of vague on it, but it's set to come out in May. It's going to be written by Busiek and illustrated by Yildiray Sin. Narn, I believe it is. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Basically, it's just going to kind of, it's going to be like his own sort of anthology type series with stuff spanning, you know, from the All-Star Winter Squadron to like the 60s and that sort of thing. You know, kind of the stuff that Busick has kind of made his name on in terms of writing. And, yeah, I think
it's... that before?
Well, he did Marvels.
Yeah.
With so, the limited series, but this is going to be kind of...
Isn't that what it was, basically? Kind of...
Benjamin, you devoted to the Marvels. I wasn't a big fan of it myself, but you want to go a little bit... You want to just give people a primer what the Marvels was or what Marvels was?
It was a chronicalization of, like, the 60s up to right before the 90s of Marvel Comics through the eyes of Phil Sheldon, a photographer. And it covers, like, sort of, like, iconic Marvel events, all told, all with Alex Ross's painted art style. Yeah. That's what it was.
So how does this differ?
Well, Marvels was told from a ground perspective. It was told to the perspective of a human living through it. You didn't actually get any of the story from the side of the people were...
Oh, okay. All right.
You didn't get the X-Men chiming in or like Captain America or anything like that. This will be stories that he is writing about these characters from these characters' point of view. This is going to be visiting Phil Sheldon again as a newsman.
This isn't going to be in continuity, is it? Because I don't know.
I can't imagine it would be.
Technically, Marvels is in continuity. Because it's time based, like it's clearly World War II. It's the 1960s. So technically, Marvels isn't in continuity. Otherwise, everybody would be super fucking old.
The concept is the unfolding of the Marvel universe throughout, like chronologically. But obviously, that stuff doesn't hold true nowadays. You know, even with like
why not?
Says,
Captain America was in World War II and only got released 40 years later.
Yeah, and Magneto will still 40 years from now still be a Holocaust survivor, even though there aren't really many of those going to be around 40 years from now.
He eats yogurt. It adds to the longevity.
Ah, he eats protein. Yeah, you know. The first issue includes a picnic in Prospect Park, which I think is a reference to Frank Castle, if no one else. The All-Star Winter Squadron 47, Reed Richards' time in military intelligence. That's just a startup. Mm-hmm. There's going to be more stuff happening down the line, but it's basically going to be kind of his attempt at an anthology series, which I think is a perfect playground for Kurt Busiek to play, you know, especially if you have... him telling the stories and stuff. So I'll be looking forward to that. And then the last thing is not necessarily, it's not going to be an ongoing, I don't think, but it ties into an upcoming event called Empire, which is going to feature the Kree-Skrull alliance taking on Earth. Yeah, I know. We'll get to that eventually because I'm thinking of making that book of the week when number one drops. So say. But they're launching a tie-in book called The Union, which is focusing on a group of British superheroes led by Union Jack. It's going to feature several new heroes as well as legacy heroes, I think. But the guy who's going to be writing it, which actually got my interest, is named Paul Grist. And he is a British comic book writer, a zine writer from way back in the day, who is most notable for his time writing Judge Dredd. Who is going to be picking up and writing this tie-in series featuring the Union.
How
so,
brutal will this book be?
Tune that's in to a find good out. Question, man. Yeah, because if you know classic Judge Dredd, it ain't no fucking joke. That book is hardcore.
Yeah, boot to the face and there's spikes in that boot.
Yeah, man. That's what I got for the comic book news. So just, I guess, going around the table, Taser, is there anything immediately jumps out at you or sort of anything that comes to mind with these series that have been announced?
The X-Men thing with me, yeah, whatever. I have no interest whatsoever.
Am I still the only one on the X-Men bandwagon? Is it just me at this point?
Yeah.
Because I know John's not doing it, so he doesn't like those filthy.
And I haven't. I mean... Yeah, I'm not touching it. Although, in regards to the book that you reviewed last week, the X-Men versus...
The X-Men Fantastic
yeah, I actually
crossover.
Went and read that because I thought it was interesting, something you put in. Yeah, and I had to see what the deal was because I didn't remember it the way that you said that they put it. And I saw what they said. No, you weren't wrong. You actually said what they said. But I remember the book and the part that they tried to highlight Oh, yeah, I remember that. That's not what this was, but, you know, whatever. And it wasn't bad, you know, so it wasn't bad, but I don't think I'll be reading the next one. Either way, Marvels might get a look. I don't know. We've talked about this before, mostly because of Ig. I want to read that. It's just, it's one of those things where it's like, this over here. You know, something always kind of gets in the way of me reading it. I don't know what it is.
And one of those things where you got to have it happen like at the right confluence of circumstances, like the right things happen to be like, you know, this I can read this now.
Angle, and I've got to have a blue lens, some weird shit. But it doesn't sound dull and boring. It sounds interesting. So I'll at least look at the first issue. That's the most I can say. Union Jack, the Union, that sounds kind of interesting. Because last I heard, wasn't Union Jack, I think, his granddaughter or something?
This one female? Looks definitively male. I believe it is the Joseph Chapman version, rather.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's a shame. Because I thought it would. While I'm not one to get on the diversity bandwagon, I thought that was, you know, pretty cool. Like, okay, yeah, true, cool, a chick, no problem.
Kids, that's a hint of foreshadowing to come later on.
Hey, you know, as long as they don't pander, because I hate pandering the crew. Anyway,
you hate that?
I can't stand that shit. But well, either way, looking at this, it looks interesting. So, you know, it'd be nice
you can
if
put
like
down
them. Go ahead.
No, you could put down your feminist sword because there's gonna be 3-2 ratio of women to men on this team. So, you know, you got that going for you.
Will I still be able to yell at white men and call them white men and their opinions don't count? Because they're straight white men.
Oh, boy, will you. And if you want to say something along the lines of that white bitch, guess what? They're all white bitches, so you should have no problem singling somebody out.
Do I have the agency to do that? Because, you know, as a straight black male, no, Nubian. I'm a straight Nubian male. I don't know if I have the agency that I could actually do that.
Listen, if the union gets on your case, just call up the crew. They'll come back and it'll all be good, man. It'll all be fine, okay?
No, see, I can't call the crew. What I have to do is I have to call the new agents of Atlantis because they're all Asian. So therefore, there's a diversity in effect, and I'm not just falling back on fellow Nubians. I've got the Asian crew. You know, because they're all butt kickers.
Oh.
You know, the kung
sure, that's just not because you got the yellow fever, is it?
I got yellow fever.
Benjamin, what say you of the new comic solicitations we talked about?
I mean, you already know my opinion on the X-Men shit. I feel like...
Yeah, I get it.
The kiss thing is just weird.
Oh, we haven't talked about that yet.
I wish John John was here for that. Oh my gosh, John John, you old man! Damn.
Oh,
you.
Fucking scoot the articles together better than shit.
Sorry. I mean, I took you through it. I mean, the Marvels and the
Indian but stuff. One thing goes in one thing out the other. Whatever. You already know. I mean, the Marvels thing seems pointless. It just feels like they're milking something that doesn't need to be milked.
Yeah.
I mean, the trade. I mean, you can sell money on the trade. Just by itself, like that makes
it's one
money.
Of those books that they're doing covers by Alex Ross, and it baits you into like, "Ooh, Alex Ross," and then you open it, and be like, "Oh, it's not Alex Ross."
But it is Alex Ross, though. That's the thing. This one won't be, though. I don't think so.
Yeah, no. This series will not be. This will be.
Yeah. As for the British thing, I mean, Excalibur kind of burned me on everything Marvel UK shit. Just like I cared. I don't care anymore. Fuck this.
I tried to care, but you burned me. Now I can't trust no more.
If
they, well, I look at it like this. If they've got Union Jack's sister was a speedster or some sort, right? Was
hell if I know. Dude, I know Jack
shit
about
nobody.
Jack.
Nobody. Like, I feel like the Marvel Britain characters outside of Captain Britain, outside of Excalibur. Are just like, who the fuck are you? Like,
well, you can't really say that for Union Jack because Union Jack was in Invaders. I mean, come on.
Right? Like he's the exception. But there's probably a bevy of characters that I don't. That's cool, but they never get used because number one, they're not European anymore. you know, it's going to be post-Brexit.
Yeah, they actually said the name of the team was getting backlash because it was the Union, and they just left the European Union through Brexit. So that was actually getting some backlash from British fans.
Uh-oh, somebody forgot to update. Well, even that being so, I personally don't really care. But, you know, I get that people who might be locationally involved, it might matter to them, in which case I just say retitle the book for European audiences. Really? It's not like they haven't done that over the years anyway. Be that as it may.
They can call it. They can actually call it the Empire, because it'll be like the British Empire again. Yeah, that'll be fun.
No, but Spitfire. Wasn't Union Jack's sister Spitfire? And her husband...
Why are you so hung up on Union Jack's sister, man?
No,
I don't understand.
I'm going over, like, you know, old history. That's why. It was Spitfire and Whizzer. Because they were supposed to be Pietro and Wanda's parents, remember?
You're just making shit up now.
That's the first time I've ever heard of that.
I might be getting stuff mixed up, but there's supposed to be something like that going on there. But regardless, either way, I like the idea that they're, you know, making use of Union Jack because he's a character that they haven't touched in God knows how long. And, you know, they're bringing into play, you know, other European, you know, characters that they've created, you know, rather than, you know, the new Agents of Atlantis. Atlas, excuse me. They're all the same. They run together. Oh my God, I can't believe I said that. Holy shit.
Oh man, you're getting too old for this shit.
I am. I really am. Moving right along.
Well, we're gonna keep you in the game for as long as we can, sir. Just, you know.
Yeah, just make sure when you shoot me in the back of the head while I'm in the pasture, make sure I'm looking at the flowers.
Look at the flowers, Daisy. Look at the flowers. Sure you don't want to go off that cliff like Thelma and Louise? Or... meanwhile, we're going to move in now into talking a little bit about a couple of the Disney Plus productions. With one regard, we have... I know Benjamin holds aloft the idea that set photos are the devil.
They are the devil.
We do have a set photo from the set of WandaVision.
Why?
I don't know if you want to block yours for this one, Ben, but...
No, I'm gonna block the fucking segment.
Oh, come on, dude.
I'm using my veto powers. Moving on.
No.
I'll say this. You can have the discussion on our Facebook page where I am not there, but we will not be discussing the photo pick here because set photos are #... the devil.
The people need to know. Puss. We need
yeah,
to talk
they can
about
know
this
on
the
our
show.
Facebook. They can know Puss. On our Facebook.
Anyway, moving
just like how people
right...
are shitting on the new Batman because there's set photos.
I don't give a shit about... Dude, these set photos are just a way of life nowadays, man. They happen.
Yeah, he's still the devil, though.
But his bat
well, yeah,
costume
but still...
has the gun as the bat symbol.
Ugh, for God's sake.
Set photos of the devil.
All right. Edit this out, then. Make a note.
No, I'm going to leave it in.
What? Why are you going to leave this in?
Because I want to make it awkward as hell for you. Also, God. I'm lazy.
Man, that's, that was it right there. That's the real answer.
So anyway, there's a photo of Jimmy Woo and Monica Rambeau talking, and S.W.O.R.D. is involved in WandaVision anyway. She's wearing S.W.O.R.D. paraphernalia, which hints at the inclusion of the extraterrestrial organization. And looks like she's going to be working one-on-one with Jimmy Woo, actually from the Agents of Atlas. So Taser, you got your little tie-in thing for later on down the line. How about that? In addition to that, there's been some casting news on The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Carl Lumley has joined the cast of the Disney Plus series. Recently, he was on Supergirl. He played the father of Martian Manhunter, but he is perhaps best known as the voice of Martian Manhunter from the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited cartoons. Now, there is no word on who he is playing, no official word anyway. However, the hot rumor is that he'll be playing Isaiah Bradley, a.k.a. the Black Captain America, for the Disney Plus series. So whatever shape that may take, that is what we got for Disney Plus so far. Taser, how do you feel about this spat of news, sir?
What was that? Because I was reading something.
You little bitch.
I honestly was reading something. I have no idea what you just said.
Oh, my God.
This is why you should just not, you know, just respect
the
rule of law.
Don't read podcast, dude. Jesus Christ. We're trying to run a podcast here. Be professional, God damn it.
If we're going to be professional, I want to get paid for this. No, what was it? What was it?
Carl Laemmle has joined the cast of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. No official word on his casting, but he may be Isaiah Bradley, a.k.a. the Black Captain America, in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
You mean the guy from, what was it, Truth?
Yeah,
Red, White, Black. What's his name's grandfather? Like, yeah, he was the prototype for Steve Rogers.
Yes, he was. Grandfather of Elijah Bradley from
right,
the Young Avengers.
Right, exactly. I actually read that, and I thought it was interesting, but... because they ended up making Patriot, you know, he's got a history, so he's kind of there. But I have to say, it's kind of like a Agents of Atlantis. You can pay attention to it if you want to. The idea of Nubians being test monkeys, and I realize that has a bit of irony in its use, being test dummies, rather, for medical experience, for other things, is not lost on me, Tuskegee Airmen. So,
Well, like, are you talking about the Tuskegee Airmen or the Tuskegee syphilis studies?
Which is pretty... Yeah, the syphilis studies. Thank you. It's a nice thing. It's a bit of history. Carl Laemmle was Martian Manhunter, and he was also... what was that character he played back in the 90s? He had a show on Fox. He was a superhero.
Oh, are you talking about Mantis?
Yeah, Mantis. Thank you. Which lasted, like, what, 3 seasons?
No, it only lasted 1 season, 94 to 95.
Fair enough. Fine. You know, I don't have a whole lot of, it's not going to influence me too much either way. As far as I'm concerned, it's a nice little, hey, this thing happened and we're putting it in, you know, in the show because we can, why not? Okay, fine. Right. You know.
What about
just be there once or twice and then we won't see him again, most likely. Patriot might be a thing, though.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. They're bringing the Young Avengers out in spades over the last couple, you know, products. They're supposedly Wiccan's going to be involved. There's going to supposedly involve Hulkling. Rumors about America Chavez, Kate Bishop showing up. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they've found a way to bring in Elijah Bradley, you know, and made him like his patriot, you know, his alter ego.
No, but watch, what they'll do is they'll have him come out and introduce himself as Patriot, and then they'll probably segue him into being Battlestar working under U.S. Agent.
Battlestar.
That was...
Battlestar, like a sidekick that I missed?
Yeah, that was the guy who was... who took over Captain America after Steve got replaced. He had a Bucky, and the guy realized that, wait a minute, hold on, this is not working. So they had him, because they were basically about equal, it's just that John, whatever the hell his name was Caucasian. He didn't want to have that Sambo thing, you know, that shtick that hanging
Jesus
over him.
Jesus Christ.
So they renamed him Battlestar. So they were a little more even in view rather than, you know, Cap Bucky, you know, that dynamic, which, fine, whatever. And then Battlestar went to go work for Silver Sable and then disappeared, as far as I'm concerned. Like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they pulled that, because this is Disney,
right?
And pandering and representation.
What do you think of Monica Rambeau? That bit of news.
Yay. I like Monica Rambeau. I hope to actually give her powers. And you know what? I'm going to be a dick and say I hope she gets the powers and I heard that they're going to put Rogue in Captain Marvel 2. So,
oh, for God's sake.
Goodbye, Brie Larson, and hello, Monica Rambeau, who's the actual first female Captain Marvel. Just saying. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. And
it's
actually,
not
I like
gonna
the
happen.
Actress.
Good on you for hoping.
But no, in all seriousness, though, I like the actress. I thought she's fine. She's in the new James Bond movie coming out. She seems competent and, you know, she seems competent. Mm. So, cool. Right. And I love Monica Rambeau as a character. So, and not because she's black female, but because she's a competent character. So, yay. And I do mean that, yay.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Benjamin, any thoughts on Carl Lumley as possibly Isaiah Bradley in the Falcon and Winter Soldier?
No.
Okay, moving right along then. We got some merch to talk about before we move into reviews. We have, they just announced a new series of Marvel Legends action figures coming out that are all Age of Apocalypse themed from the X-Men. So what do we got? We got Dark Beast, Weapon X, Jean Grey, Nate Grey, a.k.a. X-Man, Morph, Wild Child, and Sunfire in his Morph. Age of Apocalypse.
This is for you,
yeah, Morph.
Morph.
This is for you, Morph.
That's still a great
Not
cartoon.
Not gonna lie, though, holy Morph's shit. Laugh in that cartoon, I mimic that laugh. If you have Disney Plus, just go watch the first episode, and you'll just hear Morph go, that's how he laughs. I'm glad that bitch died.
Yeah, he didn't realize actually, no. that they brought him back and then realized...
No,
that,
yeah. You know. Sinister had him... found him after the Sentinel, after they thought the Sentinel
right.
had killed him. And he's like, you left me behind. And he has, like, black makeup paint and everything. That's the last time you see Morph, I think,
no,
right?
No, it's not.
Does he come back?
He comes back a few more times, and then you realize he gets freed of Sinister's control. And, you know, they make peace and stuff. So Morph actually comes back and he survives and ends up on good terms with the X team. Yeah, that happens. Seriously.
And there's going to be, as in the grand tradition of Marvel action figures, there's going to be a build-a-figure of the Sugar Man. He will be the build-a-figure for the Age of Apocalypse line.
What, the Sugar Man from the My Hero Academia?
No, Sugar Man from Age of Apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
The big headed dude with like four arms and... Where his head is pretty much his torso.
Huh. Ben would know more about that than I would.
Yeah, the link is in the chat if you want to check out the figures. I think Sunfire looks particularly hot, pardon the phrase. But
yes.
Him and Dark Beast, the Dark Hank McCoy, the detail on those figures is sublime. I think they look great. So even though I'm not a huge action figure guy, I could see myself going in on one or two of those if came the occasion. And in a partnership all the way out of the late 70s and early 80s, KISS, the rock band, KISS, is teaming up with Marvel to come out with a brand of accessories and drinkware from BioWorld. Home goods from Jay Franco and posters from Trends International as a co-brand venture. It was a joint statement released by Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. That's it. I was trying to think of who the hell it was. But yeah, they just announced picking up on our debut 1978 Marvel relationships, and these guys have partnered before. And I'm not entirely sure what that's going to entail, but I'm a little baffled by it, to be perfectly honest with you, considering I don't think KISS has been relevant since, like, 1995, so...
That's even being generous.
Yeah.
Although they were kind of relevant this past week, where that, I think it was a KISS cover band, where the dude's hair, back of his hair got lit on fire during a pyro effect.
Shit, yes, I saw that. That guy looked, oh my god.
Yeah, and he just kept playing the set, and, like, the roadies had to come out, he didn't miss a beat. So that's probably the most Lots relevant.
Hardcore.
Right
hardcore.
Yeah, that's rock and roll. But it wasn't even KISS. It was a cover band. I'm pretty sure it was a cover band.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
They were trying to
I mean,
jump the ranks. Look, I'm gonna play this Kiss song while on fire. Yeah.
He's gonna look so good on Instabro.
Running with the devil. No, that was Van Halen, I think.
Yes, that was Van Halen. Was Van Dave, Halen. David Lee Roth Van Halen, not even Van Hagar. That's Van Halen, man. So, yeah, I'm eager to see what kind of fresh merch they come out with and who still gives a shit about Kiss. But
you know what? I put a little bit of this on you posted it on our Facebook page. And, you know, honestly, when I was a kid, I remember the Kiss comics. And I knew of Kiss by the art and, like, the record covers and stuff that I would see in, you know, some stores and shit that I would either pass by or go through and whatever. And I was like, what the hell's wrong with those guys? They wear makeup. You know, this is like little 7- and 8-year-old Taser, okay? 14 and 15 to, like, 19-year-old Taser's like, yeah, you know, music's not too bad, you know? 30-year-old Taser, I've actually heard quite a bit of it. It's like, yeah, this is all right, dude. But, you know, now knocking on 50-year-old Taser, the fuck? These guys again? So, yeah, not for nothing, but nobody's asking for this. So this has got to just be, you know, some bit of nostalgia that, you know, some trap that somebody fell into and, you know, they're trying to pull down other people. Because I don't know anybody who's asking for this to be a thing. You know, I really don't. And it's not that I hate
maybe
Kiss.
Gene Simmons.
Well, I'm sure he could probably use the money that he gets from this for, like, bail money or something like that. But, I mean, real. I mean, come on. Kiss? Really? Ah. And I've read some of those books. They are not that good. Kiss as Superheroes is a novel idea, but it's novel. It's a novel idea that happened when as Iggy said, when the band was relevant. Kiss isn't relevant now. Nobody's talking about Kiss. I mean, they're not even talking about Gene Simmons anymore, really. You know, he's not involved in any controversy.
Nowadays, if you hear about Gene Simmons, it's just, oh, he's an asshole, you know, from behind-the-scenes stories and stuff. Apparently, he's kind of a prick.
That
so.
Or, you know, the age of some, you know, fan. Anyway.
Well.
So.
But there was this one story, I'll never forget, someone told about meeting Gene Simmons, where he comes up to Gene and he says, like, hey, Gene, I don't know if you remember me, but I met you, like, in Ohio in, like, you know, 80-something or whatever. And Gene looks this guy dead in the eye and he just says to him, if you had my life, would you remember you? Like, just straight. So
that is awesome, though. Holy shit. That is an epic burn. Oh, my God.
It's epic, but it's such a dick move.
It is. It is a tremendously dick move. But it's one of those dick moves that you still got to clap.
Like, how do you even... How do you continue the conversation after that point? Because, well,
you
okay,
don't.
Bye, Gene. Thanks.
Yeah, that's... You don't even say... That's... Turn around, go home. You got this.
Your
nothing you can
over.
Say.
Try again
you
tomorrow.
Know, you just go to sleep and start over again. And fuck it all, man. Holy shit! Damn you, John! John, you should be here for this talk. You old man, you. You're making me do it by myself. Damn it. Because you know, John John listened to Kiss.
Oh, definitely.
For sure.
He still listens to Kiss in his 8-track
right.
player in his station wagon.
78 Woody driving down the road with all the kids in the back.
Because Oklahoma is perpetually stuck in 1975.
Oh, gosh.
Just like y'all were fucked. Just like you were knocking me last week, John Chan. I knock you.
Yeah. Yeah, get it, Ben. Go on.
Oh, God damn, John, John, you need to be here.
Okay. Any last-minute thoughts on the Age of Apocalypse action figures or Kiss before
no,
we move
on? No, other
than
that, a person who works in the toys department, you toy collectors can suck my nuts.
Hey.
Is the new fig... No, we're sold out. But I thought you did... No, they're sold out. Meanwhile, Ben's hoarding all 50 of them in the back room, putting them up on
no.
eBay.
I had to for a while, but not for my own benefit.
Lies.
because like they kept getting stolen. Like we put them out one day, and they were $50 figures. Within a day, they were stolen
by other employees. Yep.
Probably.
Wow.
All right, moving right along then, we're going to segue on into reviews. And considering that technically he's already done this review once before, but it's lost now to the sands of time, we're going to let Benjamin go first with his review of Guardians of the Galaxy, the latest relaunch under that title. So, Benny, why don't you go ahead and take over and take us on a tour of space?
So, number one, I hate that Marvel renumbered this because it was only the last run of Guardians of the Galaxy literally only was 12 issues. Yeah, it was only 12 issues and they renumbered it. And it's literally continuing off both that end of that run and it's continuing off the end of the Annihilation stuff that happened over the winter, over the December time. So it's like, this should have been number 13. And then you could have called it like on the font, like whatever the story arc is called, part one, whatever. But no, it's number one. It's stupid. Number two. So, but basically, what I liked about this is that this is it does feel like a new start though. The Guardians are kind of like, yeah, we saved the world. We don't need to do that anymore. Gamora's like they're like having a barbecue like on a planet. Like they're literally just relaxing until Nova comes out of nowhere and he goes like guys, there's a fucking situation, you know. So basically the problem is that the Greek gods have been resurrected. But they're like angry and pissed, and they're like all new technology. So like you got Zeus, Hera, Hermes, you know, your classic Greek pantheon.
Really?
But now they're in space, kicking ass of all the
space other gods.
Space. Yeah, they're space Greek gods. Yeah, and even got like Tron-esque suits or costumes with lights and everything. But there was one point where Zeus punched Nova so hard he broke the Nova Force. And, like, at the end of issue one, Nova's just crippled. Yeah. Like, just...
Jesus.
Yeah, Zeus in the Marvel Universe is not a joke at all.
Yeah, so, like no, the only reason Nova was even alive in issue two is because of the Nova Force. It's barely holding him together. But, yeah, he got punched hard. Like, Jesus Christ. Meanwhile, you have... but then, so... That's only after we're like, Gamora's like, we're not doing that anymore. But then Nova kind of explains the situation where like, listen, there is nobody else. After the Annihilation Scourge event with like the Cancerverse coming back, after the Thanos, the resurrection of Thanos again, after, you know, all this other shit that's been going down, like this is all that's left. Like we can't keep going like this. But eventually both Rocket and Peter agree, okay, we got to do something. So they're on the mission with Nova. Nova, not Gamora. Phi Lavelle and who's the ball? What's the ball chick's name again?
Moondragon.
Yeah, they're all. They joined the mission. And so issue two is more action packed. But what's crazy about issue two is that Peter is trying to detonate a bomb on the home base of the Greek god of the space Greek gods, and it basically Peter puts himself in a he kills one of the Greek gods. He kills Artemis successfully. That course causes the wrath of Zeus to come upon him, but it was all an effort to stall time for the bomb to go off while everybody else gets off the planet. So the last page is literally the ship exploding with Peter on the building or in it. So as of right now, unless the Star-Lord thing, because that's kind of been in the background, like Peter's questioning like the origin, like the Star-Lord, because apparently the origins of like this, what he is like weird. And like he's starting to question it. So unless something like that comes into play, which it might, given how they've they flash back to it a couple of times, to that 70s era Star-Lord, he's dead. Like he's like, he was point blank on that bomb. And this is after like he told Gamora, I'm not gonna go. So you know Gamora's gonna be pissed. And this is after Rocket almost died because the implants in him were failing and they changed it in the previous run or previous issue 12 basically. I didn't really want to like another issue because I wasn't gonna pick up the series at all. I hated that they renumbered it. That was the only reason.
I feel like Guardians is one of those series that always gets renumbered. Like, it's been the victim of constant renumbering and rebranding.
They renumbered it. They renumbered it when Jerry Duggan came in to like 150, and I'm like, okay. And then they renumbered it when Donny Cates took over last year. I'm like, okay, whatever, fine. This should have been issue 13 and 14. Like, there's no reason why it shouldn't be. It's even worse because it has a stupid legacy numbering in the top left. I'm like, just keep it 13 and 14. Like, no, just put in like your fucking pre-order shops. This is a new story arc to jump on. You don't need to do any number one. Besides all that, the art by Juan Cabal, I think, is really good. It's not great, but it gets the job done. He conveys the Vulture Mirror. Oh, also Hercules is there too. Hercules was being held prisoner.
Say something about that. Because yeah, it's kind of weird there. To have Hercules is dead? From what?
He's not. He's there. At the end of issue one, the cliffhanger is Hercules is. They found Hercules prisoner. In issue two, he kind of helps a lot with the team. I don't know if Hercules is going to stay on the team or if he's just here for this story arc. But he doesn't feel like the previous run of Hercules, but there's that sense of fun in him. But it's not quite the same. I don't know. He just sounds a little bit different to me.
Well, he had a run not too long ago with Dan Abnett where he kind of got serious a little bit about trying to be a hero again. Like, he really serious stuff.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but, like, he definitely – he sounded fun, but, like, he understood the gravity of the situation that they were in. He wasn't, like, you know, he wasn't for victory or shit.
He wasn't fun, Hercules. I like that Hercules. Aww.
Yeah. I mean, there was – I don't know. It's hard to say. But yeah, so yeah, Peter's dead, seemingly. Like I said, unless the Star-Lord thing comes into play, which it might, given how they hinted at it a lot. But I mean, I like it so far. It has like a good science fiction action to it. Very, very fun. Very, very fast paced.
And who's the team on this one again? That you say?
I mean, it's the traditional Guardians. It's just that this time they team up with Nova, Phylavel, Moondragon, and of course Hercules. Just for this instance, but like Drax and Gamora are back on like the planet they were staying at, resting. So like it's still the traditional Guardians. It's just at this particular mission, Peter decided to be a dumbass. Peter and Rocky decided to be dumbasses and go along with this mission, even though they said they wouldn't. But I mean, I'm enjoying this relaunch so far.
Fair enough. And who's the creative team on this one as well?
Who's writing? Al Ewing, who's the writer.
Oh, I like Al Ewing.
Yeah, current. I think the most probably he's known for right now is in Immortal Hulk.
Man.
Which, by the way, he'll also be at T2E2. And Juan Cabal has been the artist for the first two issues. So good stuff so far.
All right, fair enough. That's cool. Taser, we've built up a fair bit to talk about what you're going to review for us. Why don't you go ahead and take us to the Pan-Asian whatever settlement it is.
Okay.
Mexican for dinner? You all right over there? What
happened? I just had some refried beans. Anyway, I want to state this for posterity. I hate pandering. I hate any time people think that they can take a bunch of characters who have one or two things in common, like the color of their hair and the fact that they got blue eyes, or maybe they come from the same region of a planet, put them all together in a book and think, hey, automatic audience. I absolutely hate that shit. Okay, that's why I hated the fucking crew. That's why I would hate if John Byrne put out a book with all of his blonde characters, because they all look the same. And that's why I'm not that big a fan of Atlantis Attacks 2020 edition. Okay, this version involves a team, the new Agents of Atlas, formed together by Jimmy Woo with Amadeus Cho as the leader, from a group that was put together at the end of War of the Realms, which I didn't read, so this is actually news to me. And the team consists of pretty much every Asian character made in the last 20 years, with the sole exception being actually what's his name? Shang-Chi. You know, he's the oldest one there, and he's the oldest character that's of Asian descent. Oh my God. Anyway, let's just go into the book. So, book actually starts off with Amadeus Cho and Silk, looking at, the portal city of Pan, which, you know, like you, I have no idea what the hell's going on here. Apparently, some Taiwanese guy named, was it something, David Nguyen, found a way to create a paradise, a place where you can get away using portals. There's a a Shanghai portal, something Tokyo-esque portal, and something else. I think it was either Majapur or Thailand or something. And, you know, it's luxury and relaxation. And if you don't have a place, you can come here and just get away. And it's not only for Asians. Okay, let's be clear of that. But it's a place where you can go and get away. And Cho is with Moon, and they're looking over it, and it's, wow, this is awesome. Ooh. And then he gets spiked into the ground by Namor. Wait, let us flash back. So apparently, Jimmy Woo from the original Agents of Atlantis pulls Cho on the side, says, you have to be the leader of this team because reasons, and you have to look out for Pan, and, you know, this is a thing that's worth doing, and I want you to be in charge. And apparently Cho, you know, just does it, which is surprising, and he gives them a bunch of people, like, there's a character called Wave, what's her name, the chick with the tremor powers from
Daisy Johnson.
Thank you, Daisy Johnson. Same thing.
God damn it.
White Fox. There's a White Fox here. Swordmaster.
Hey, that's racist. Why is it gonna be a White Fox, man? Why because can't it be a can't it be a Yellow Fox?
That's her name, White Fox. I didn't name her. Talk to Marvel. Shang-Chi. I think the little girl from who was in Into the Spider-Verse, I think they did something with her.
Silk?
No, not Silk. The one that was in the robot? Because there's this little...
Oh.
There's this little female character there wearing what looks like a Spidey mask, striking a pose. Doesn't really do anything, but I'm like, is this the same one? You know, I'm not sure what's going on there. And, you know, a bunch of other characters is a good amount of women. And they're all Asian of some sort. So I'm like, oh, that's what they did with this. Oh, boy. So, yeah, pandering. And they, mainly in the first book, they're doing damage control because things started going wrong. And Wave saves this guy who's just surfing from a giant sea monster. And the tsunami that it creates because problems. And apparently Namor is pissed because the guy who created Pan kidnapped a sea dragon to use it to power his luxury, whatever you want to call it. So right now I'm thinking, oh, look, it's Genosha, you know? So, freaking Namor's subordinates, they found where it is. They let him know. He decides to go over there and goes, give me back my dragon. Now, Amadeus Cho is still kind of sort of a Hulk, apparently. He's not as Hulk as he used to be. This is kind of alluded to in the second issue because he meets Namora, and she says that he's not as, you know, Hulk as, and she pokes him, and he's like, ow! And I'm, wow, really? Okay. And she actually seems like her cousin rather than being herself, but I don't know. There's some weird shit going on here. Right. Either way.
Yeah.
So he gives them an ultimatum. They have to take, and they've got one day to return the dragon, or else Imperious Rex! So, they get the Kraken. Jimmy Woo and the original Agents of Atlas team show up out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. Thank you, Greg Pak, you hack. They don't show a ship landing. Everybody just happens to be on this beach, and Jimmy Woo and everybody else just shows up there. No, I mean, they're just there. See, anyway, they introduce the teams to each other, and, you know, there's a bit of back and forth. You know, like, I don't know why I should do this. You just told me to take the team. I don't even want to do this. And he's like, well, sometimes you have to be able to make the hard decisions, and sometimes you have no choice but to make the... So they decide to put their heads together and come up with a solution so that there's no big problems, because they know that if Nemo wants to fuck shit up because he feels that he's been slighted, he will fuck shit up because he feels he's been slighted. Namor gave them the day because... I'm not gonna F-stomp you today because I want to take and feel good about myself. So you have 24 hours and then I will F-stomp you. I'm a nice guy, aren't I? So yeah. Like I said, the two teams come together. They put their heads together. Amadeus Cho tells everybody on his team to watch out for the others. Get some of the original team's characters to work on a specific problem of finding a way to power the everything that this town is, which means that they take Death Robot. It's something like that. It looks like the robot from the thing from Another World or whatever it was. And they take a scale from the dragon and put it in... They put it in the Death Robot, and now it's mimicking its power output, so that they can, you know, they can let the dragon go. And yay! Everybody feels good now. All right, woohoo! We done saved Pan, and the guy who runs Pan, they don't do a whole lot with him. You know, a lot of the dialogue is focused on Cho and a bit on Wu, and there's the interaction between Cho and Namora, but none of it with Nuyen. And it's like, well, this is kind of, you know, the man who's behind all of this. He doesn't actually do a whole lot. They don't have him in a whole lot here, so you don't find, you don't get any justification as to why he did what he did. It might, maybe it'll be in the third one, I don't know, but it certainly wasn't here. And they let the dragon go free, and, you know, the dragon's like, yay, swoosh, and la 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 la, and Namor's there, and he's like, oh, there goes the dragon. You see the Atlanteans, they're like, oh, dragon's caught, and the dragon proceeds to start destroying shit. Crash, boom, kaplow, blah, and they're like, oh my god, run away, swim away. So the dragon is either killed or knocked out, and they check behind one of his gills, and they find a chip device, which on the size of this dragon, the thing's basically a laptop. It's a big-ass chip. But he's like, Cho! Swoosh with my trident. And he flies, and this leads us back to the first issue, where he puts Cho in the earth and then dives over towards the building where Nuyen is. And you realize that he's going after Nuyen, of course, and it doesn't work because Nuyen had his own plans, and you have the Sirenas, who are some other aquatic race that I've never heard of, you know, but apparently they're not in the Atlantean allied list, and Nuyen struck a deal with them because of that, or something. I don't know what it is, but either which way, they kind of saved his bacon against Namor, who was about to take out, who was about to kill him, and kind of crash into his tower. So yeah, that's, you know, that's the crux. And I'm just, Well, A, I give this book credit for using the Agents of Atlantis, because the Agents of Atlantis as a team concept, they're not in the Avengers area, they're not in the X-Men area, they're not in the Spider-Man area. They're its own thing, and it's within the Marvel Universe. So this is, they're a good Marvel Universe team. You know, they're not one of the generic ones that we've seen get mined a lot. I like that idea. And while I'm initially kind of opposed, because I read a little bit of that initial run of Agents of Atlantis, and the historical tweaks that they made kind of pissed me off. But and I think isn't Jimmy Woo, wasn't he a S.H.I.E.L.D. member? I think it was an agent. I think it was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent originally.
Jimmy Woo?
Jimmy Woo, yeah.
Yeah, he was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Then he broke off and did Agents of Atlas.
Right.
With,
yeah, they did a lot of backstory, and then, you know, it went from there, and then they did what was it, Hickman's early version of S.H.I.E.L.D., which led to the early version of Avengers before Avengers. I was just, oh my god. Anyway, so I like Agents of Atlas because they're not in the regular cookie cutter, you know, groupings for, you know, Marvel characters. But this second group, you know, the Pan-Asian Agents of Atlas team. look, there's nothing wrong with having Asians on your team, of course. But, you know, if you get all of a single subset type of people together, kind of like X-Men, but, you know, that one's a little different since they're all fictional and there's no homo superior race. And, you know, you put them on here and it's just, wow, I kind of wonder who this is supposed to appeal to. And I don't know if the argument is actually there. Well, hey, there's a lot of people like that. But, you know,
but that's just a theory.
It's my own personal theory, you know. But, you know, like I said earlier, I don't like when they do things like this. You know, I don't watch Black Lightning because, hey, it's a black hero, therefore you should be attracted to it. No. And that's specifically why I don't watch this show. You know, I didn't read Static because, hey, he's a young black hero. I actually liked Static because he was intelligent and he dealt with a lot of things that weren't necessarily black oriented. But yeah, you know, you see an effort that's, you know, kind of, you know, supposed to push you there because of this. And I like to stay away from that kind of stuff because it just feels ew, you know, but.
Right.
For me, this book, I'm not touching the third issue, but it's not bad. It really isn't, you know. For myself, I'd probably give it a 2 because, to be perfectly honest, the art isn't that great.
Mm.
And the story's got, you know, a couple of flashes of, you know, interest. But, you know, some of the other things that it's mining, I don't like. But honestly, I think that if you've never, if you're kind of stuck in that X-Men, Avengers, or, you know, some Spider-Man derivative, if you're stuck with that main grouping, this isn't a bad book to kind of test to see what else is out there. It's not that bad in that regard, you know? So I would recommend it for, you know, the little knucklehead who, when he comes into the comic book, are there any X-Men or Spider-Man or, you know, Avengers something? Hey, what about this team of here? Who are they? You know, yeah, I would give that to him. You know, expand your reading, you know, portfolio a bit. So I would do that. But for
but the youth, not you. You don't care, but the youth might like it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and there might be an older person, you know, the 45-year-old neckbeard who's like, hey, do you have any of Spider-Man or Avengers? It's like, hey, what about this Asian? Who are they? Have they done anything?
You got anything with any Asian girls in it?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
You got some Asian girls?
Or a few Asian men. You know, there might be some girls up there. It's like, do you have any anime? It's like, no, but what about this?
Pretty anime boys, you know, who are maybe like on a swim team or, you know, something.
Yeah, I would point somebody who, if I had an inkling that they tended to read this, that, or the other, I would point them towards this just to give them something different. But for myself, yeah, I'm not touching this again. It's not awful, but it's not for me. So I would give this a 2 out of 5 Warriors.
All right, fair enough. Well, you know, I mean, hey, for the younger generation, like I said earlier in the chat, one man's pandering is another man's kind of representation. So even though it might not mean something to you, it could mean something to somebody else. So, you know, and Greg Pak, he's been big on that wave of Asian American or just and even just Asian characters.
I don't have
you know,
a problem
so,
with Asian characters, and you know this, okay?
I know how I read. I'm not saying you.
Right.
I'm just saying he's always been one to use his platform to elevate Asian characters.
I got no problem with that, but the way it's done here, I just... It's not for me.
Anyway.
Are you okay?
He's allergic to bullshit.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg Pak, you hearing this? Let me stop.
Okay. And I'm going to go ahead and close things out. I got Wolverine number 1, the relaunch of Wolverine's new series under the Dawn of X Hickman banner. Written by Ben Percy, illustrated, well, the one story illustrated by Adam Kubert, and the other story illustrated by Victor Bogdanovic. And the first issue picks up with X-Force primarily, or it sets up as like an X-Force type tale. Wolverine wakes up after having been damn near annihilated. His healing factor is stitching him back together. But around him are the bodies of Jean Grey, Quentin Quire, and Domino. And he goes off to find out what happened. And this prompts a flashback where the X-Men and also the American intelligence agencies are investigating this group called the Flower Cartel. Now, if you'll recall, back in House of X and Powers of X, the one way that Krakoa gained sovereignty is that they've been distributing these flowers, these plants from Krakoa that extend lifespan, cure all disease, act as nutrients for, like, in place of, like, food and water and stuff. So now there is a group called the Flower Cartel that is bastardizing this plant, and they call it pollen. And pollen is what it sounds like. It's sort of a drug to give you a super high, makes you feel stronger and smarter than you are. But in addition to that, there are groups popping up called the Order of X, who are these mutant worshipping cults that take this drug as sort of like a sacrament type thing. And so the X-Force, when they're tracking this drug, they come upon this Order of X conclave in Russia. And after the church literally tries to cannibalize the mutants because they feel eating their flesh is sacred, everybody who's taken pollen dies. And they track it back to this Russian crime lord who points them in the direction of an operation out of Alaska in the deep north. That is where the drugs are being, you know, taken out of. And they reference a woman called the Pale Lady. There's no other details than that, but it gives the X-Force enough to track down. And then also in the background of all this, it sets up a CIA agent named Jeff Bannister, who has been working with the cartels in Mexico, but he gets reassigned to investigate the Flower Cartel. Yeah, I am, actually, believe it or not. So this, presumably a fight ensues, and Wolverine finds this Pale Lady, but she vanishes, and Jeff Bannister, the CIA agent who was investigating, comes upon Wolverine, and wouldn't you know it, that old chestnut, Wolverine doesn't remember anything because he's operating on pure animal instinct at this point after regenerating so harshly. So that closes out the first story. This is pretty much a twofer. You get 2 issues for the Ooh. Price you pay on this. Basically, yeah. The backup issue is, it's not even a backup, it's just a companion piece. It's also written by Ben Percy. This one's illustrated by Victor Bogdanovic, and it is the return of Omega Red. Omega Red comes seeking asylum on Krakoa, and Wolverine tries to gut him outright, but Magneto politely reminds him that all mutants are granted asylum. Wolverine vows that, you know, he's not going to let Omega Red on the island, but Magneto says, look, if you don't want him here, find something he did that we can use to not keep him here. Like, find something that we can use to say, this is why we're not granting you asylum. So he goes to France, where Omega Red allegedly came from, And wouldn't you know it, Wolverine is accosted by vampires. Apparently, in the wake of mutants coming together on Krakoa, it's also spurned other groups operating in the shadows to kind of bind their forces together. And this includes the vampires, who are doing a similar thing, I believe, over in Avengers, written by Jason Aaron. But I wouldn't know much about that firsthand. So, that being said, Wolverine begins investigating what Omega Red is doing tied up with these vampires. He meets a woman, a vampire hunter named Louise, who is destined to become the next, female dead at the feet of Wolverine, I'm sure. And Wolverine begins to piece together that Omega Red is, was he being attacked by these vampires? Was he, trying to save the people who were found dead? Because when they tracked Omega Red back, they found he had a trunk full of bodies, which Wolverine begins to assume Omega Red took them to get them away from the vampires. This turns out not to be the case. In an assault on the French catacombs where the vampires are hiding, Wolverine actually gets his blood taken, a sample taken, and it turns out that that's what they wanted all along, because after vampires, or in particular Dracula, transfuses Wolverine's blood, he can walk around in the daylight because of Wolverine's healing factor. And that's pretty fucking scary. Now, it's revealed as well that Omega Red is actually working with Dracula in exchange for the carbonadium synthesizer thing. So, yeah, but basically they're going to try to get more of Wolverine's blood so that they can turn the vampires into daywalkers, all of them. Not necessarily like Blade, but just so they can walk around the sunlight and not be bothered none.
So Blade comes into the story in what, issue 3, issue 4?
I'll keep tabs on it for you, and I'll let you know as soon as it comes up, but he hasn't shown up yet. And in fact, whoever this Louise woman is, this vampire hunter, she doesn't seem affiliated with any past vampire hunting groups. Nothing mentioned of like the Night Stalkers or even anything. She just seems to be like a devout Catholic, honestly, more than anything else. She's got a big cross on her and shit. So, she almost looks like the Magdalena a little bit from Top Cow.
The Magdalena, good callback.
Yeah, dude. Seriously, I don't know if they aped it directly or what, but yeah, she's got a Magdalena thing going on. So, but that being said, for a guy who doesn't normally enjoy Wolverine stories, I kind of dig this one. I'm interested to see if the Flower Cartel ties back into some stuff going on over in X-Men. I want to say it was issue number 3 or 4. It involved a group stealing flowers off of Krakoa. But it seems like an interesting setup. And, Wolverine is it seems like an old trope, though, going back to, he lost his memories a bit and he can't remember anything. And, well, I mean, how many times has that been done? Honestly, it's been done to death. So minus points for creativity on that one. But I did enjoy the vampire story with Omega Red a bit more, because Omega Red is such a sniveling fucking worm. And Wolverine, like, flat out hates him. So he's doing everything he can to try and keep him off the island. So I thought that was pretty good. But, overall, I thought it was a decent return to form for Wolverine with Wolverine's one of those characters, and I think I've talked about this on the Twitter chat, where he doesn't seem affected by the status quo of any one group or anything like that. He doesn't seem like he's a member of the X-Men, he's a member of the Avengers, but he's always kind of been his own entity. He's always been treated that way, and it always kind of feels that way. Like, he's never really affected by a status quo change of anybody unless he's directly responsible for it. So Wolverine does kind of exist as he has always existed, even in spite of all the new stuff Hickman is doing with the book. So, if you're into Wolverine, you don't really miss anything if you just skip all those books and want to read this one. I really don't think you'll miss much. You can catch you up pretty efficiently in the first issue. But again, one thing that Ben pointed out was that it is the price like 2 issues. It's $7.99 for issue number 1 of Wolverine. So you're basically paying for 2 issues up front. I don't know if they're going to continue that trend or if they're going to start breaking it down more as time goes on. But, we'll see how that goes. But all in all, I really enjoyed it. Again, for a guy who doesn't normally enjoy Wolverine, I thought it was a decent return to form for the character. Adam Kubert and Victor Bogdanovic on artwork duties, I thought they both did a spectacular job. They both fit Wolverine as a character really, really well. So, yeah, I give it overall, I give it a 3.5 out of 5, only because I'm not the biggest Wolverine fan ever, but I still found it enjoyable. If you're into Wolverine, you might enjoy it more than I will, but 3.5 out of 5. I'm going to laugh my ass off when you're freezing your tits off up in Chicago. You know that, right?
Just listen, listen. Chicago. This is all it's all a plan for those guys to murder me. This is what this is. All this is.
Just inadvertently murder you. Just get
yeah. They get to walk away. The plane doesn't land properly.
Or like, we'll pick you up in an hour. I'm waiting outside in an hour. They never come. I die.
He turns into an Iggy Sickle.
Oh, man. Well, I think with that, that's going to do it for us this week here on the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. And before we let you go, we do have some responsibilities. You can find us over on Facebook at the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast, but not Benjamin. There we give you a single dedicated stream of news from all kinds of outlets and sources. We are an aggregator, which means what, dare I ask, Taser?
We steal stories.
That's not true at all. That's lies and slander, dare I say.
Perfectly accurate.
We give credit where credit is due. We even comb through clickbaity articles and give you the meat so you don't have to click on them. And we give you memes and artwork and shit like that. So if you're a fan of that stuff, go on over to Facebook, like us there, and you'll get regular updates as we post them. You can also find our complete archive over on thewarriors3.wordpress.com. If you want to hear what we sounded like 7 years ago, though, God, why would you? You can find us over there. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, where we will regularly update the show. And hey, you know, if you're feeling generous, maybe rate us and leave a kind word if you're feeling up to it. And me personally, I'm over on Twitter at NoMrPowers. That's at NO_MR_POWERS. Benjamin, you're the only other guy who ever has stuff to plug. What's going on in your world?
First off, go to charge.com for a weekly video game podcast that I do with two other guys. It's really great. And of course, I'm going to be at C2E2 this weekend. This episode will be out before this happens, because otherwise you ain't getting it for another week.
Oh, no!
Yeah. But yeah, I'll be at C2E2, the comic, Chicago Entertainment Expo, whatever, fuck it, C2E2.
You know, and,
C2E2. You'll be there to freeze my ass off.
Hell yeah. Gonna be fun. Oh, goodness. Taser, anything you want to plug?
That's always a loaded statement.
I always kind of, I'm always like, it's a coin toss whether or not you answer it seriously or not. So,
I just want to say that just so we're all clear, I don't have any problems with Asian characters. All right.
I just hate
when you toss any single type of character. Some
of my best friends are Asian. I got plenty of Asian friends.
Not even. But you know, I just hate it when you do something like what they did with this and what they did with the crew. You know, you may not see it. You know, whoever's listening to this, and you're probably younger than me, you may not see it, and you may never even, it may not ever occur to you to look at it that way. But when you've seen it happen as often as I have, and you know, you see the thing that you're supposed to like because, it doesn't work like that. So that's just where I come from. You know, now if it never works, looks like that to you, if you don't ever feel like that, that's fine and dandy. You like what you like, but yeah, anything that plays out like that, I just tend to, you know, avoid like the Dickens, because, you know, I have taste. That's all I'm going to say.
Fair enough. Well, then that is going to do it for us on this installment of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I have been your host, Bri Bri. That's Taser. And the Grand Poobah, Benny Boy, says the same thing to cap off every episode. Benjamin, why don't you go ahead and say what you say at the end of every episode?
I'm cold!
You gon' be.